London calling. David here. At the other end of the line, Russell, one of London Walk's superstar guides.
Oh, that's very kind of you to say, Sam.
No, it's true, Russell.
But, yeah, it is.
A few years ago, even the Boston Globe, I think that was the highest compliment we've ever received. He said, if this were a golf tournament, every single name on the leaderboard would be a London Walk's guide.
When I was asked to become part of the London Walk's team, it was a very flattering moment. You know, I did feel that, you know, I'd stepped up a game to be welcomed into the team because I'd been on London Walk's, I'd met London Walk's guides, I knew a few London Walk's guides. And to be thought of in the same league as those, I was incredibly flattered at that point.
We're so glad you're on the team, yeah. Russell.
Well, that's very kind. You know, it's great. I think we all feed off each other, particularly in these last year when we've been doing so much virtual stuff. Because you don't always have an opportunity to experience other guides' works because you're guiding yourself, and you don't that often go on other guides' walks. But virtually, we've been doing quite a lot of it, and I've been experiencing what other guides are doing, you know, and looking at how they guide, getting ideas from them, and just being inspired by them. And just, you know, feeling that you need to raise your game when you see how well other people are doing.
Yeah, it's so true that. For years, Murray and I have said, we need to go on more walks. We just never have had time. Well, we've gone on a lot of virtual tours, and oh my goodness, we've learned so much, and as you say, seeing how other guides do it, and it just raises the game. It's been inspirational. Now we're going to do a proper Russell Nash interview, not this time. I want to get you to say a few things about this next virtual tour of yours. It's coming up, I think, in about 48 hours on
Wednesday the 5th at 7 p.m. London time.
Excellent. And it's entertaining London, is that right?
Entertaining London, yes. I kind of got the idea. I was thinking not that long ago about what we had to look forward to. As we feel that, you know, the times are changing, we're coming out of this appalling period. And all the great entertainment that I might want to experience and the people might want to experience, not just going to the theatre, but the cinema, interactive entertainments, all sorts of different kinds of entertainment. You know, London is one of the great cultural cities of the world. Mm-hmm. And it's been in hibernation for more than a year now. And not only do we have things coming back again, so, you know, the shows of the West End that were open are reopening. Lots of great stuff to come as well. And lots of people being sociable and collaborative for the first time in a long time. So there's a potential for an awful lot of new creativity to occur. And that kind of got me thinking that maybe it would be a great topic for a virtual tour to look at the story of entertainment in London. Theatre has been covered. I know, you know, Simon and other guides have done, you know, story, you know, the story of theatre in London, and I do cover that quite a bit in this virtual tour as well. But there's so much more to it than just, you know, the theatre history. You know, there's going back to Roman times when people used to go for a day out to watch the public executions and the gladiators fight. Mm-hmm. So we're starting all the way back then. You know, Saxon London, I would have had sort of storytellers sitting around the telly telling the story of Beowulf and great sagas. So, you know, entertainment in the kind of grandest scheme. I do quite a lot as well on what we might call popular entertainment, because I think it often gets overlooked. So people can look down their noses at the penny gaffs, you know, where ordinary working class Londoners would go to hear dramatic stories being told, you know, really, you know, Two Steps to Tyburn and The Blood-Stained Handkerchief. Mm-hmm. And plays like that in the sort of late Victorian period. You know, really rowdy noisy, dirty, smoky, booze-filled places.
Uh-huh.
The proper sort of people's entertainment. So I try to get into the bones of that a little bit as well.
Uh-huh. One of the great things about the virtual tours, it's just been enormously enriching. It's the abundant and full use of maps. Now, I'm already got in, I have in mind a couple of maps. I'm thinking about that very, very old one that shows archers just north of London. And I think,
yes,
well, I've seen an old map that shows ice skaters on the Thames. Is any of that going to come into it?
Yeah, I've got a few maps that I'm using for this one, including maybe my favourite maps of all the ones that I've done in London, which were the Charles Booth poverty maps that he did.
Yes.
So Charles Booth was a wealthy, successful industrialist in the late Victorian period, but he was very, very keen to highlight the social inequalities of London. Uh-huh. And he wanted something to be done about the poverty of London. And he realized that the best way to get people to understand what it was like was to show them visually on a map. So he employed a huge team of people to go around every street in London and describe the social character, the wealth, the class of the people living in each street. Mm-hmm. And he used a very simple color system. So bright yellow for the wealthiest street, black for the poorest neighborhood. So basically you look at this map and the darker the color, the greater the poverty. When you see these maps and you see how it sweeps across London, you know, neighborhoods of rich and poor are butting each other. And then when you get to some areas, you know, the sheer number of streets with really quite grinding poverty. Mm-hmm. They're very evocative, but they also make it very clear what the poverty of London was like and, you know, how rich certain parts of it were as well. So I use those a little bit in this one and a few other just, you know, those, you know, historical maps. And Layers of London is the most fantastic website, which they've basically digitized numerous dozens of old maps, and you can layer them on top of each other. So they were all done to slightly different scales. So the technical job that they've done is really quite remarkable because they each of these historical maps is overlaid on another, and you can basically call up whichever historic period you're interested in and overlay over a modern map of London. So you can really zoom in on any area and get a story through time. I think that's one of the things that we like to do, you know, when we're doing live walking tours and we're standing on a street corner or in a street or in a square or in a place, that story through time, that, you know, taking back, peeling back the layers of where we're standing through history and think about what it would have been like standing here 100, 200, 300, in some cases 1,000 or 2,000 years ago. It's something that, you know, we really like to do as guides. So, you know, using these layers of maps gives you a way of doing that virtually.
It seems to me, I mean, to use a kind of mining metaphor, that what you've hit on here is perhaps an unusual place in which to drill down, and then you're just going to find core samples all the way down and all the way back. Is that more or less right?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. But the other great thing, I think, about the virtual tours is that you're not bound geographically you are if you're walking, or even, you know, if I'm doing other sorts of guiding and I'm out with clients, even in a car. You know, say I'm looking after a family and taking them out in the car. Even then, you're bound by where you could drive to. In a virtual tour, in an hour, you can go wherever you like, not just in London, but in the world.
Yeah.
At any point in the past or even into the future.
Uh-huh.
You know? You can do that without any trouble at all on a virtual tour. And so it does kind of enable you to do these much more thematic virtual tours, which I've done quite a lot of. So like a lot of people, I think I started doing the basically based on walks that I did. So the first one I did was basically a virtual version of one of the most popular London walks, Old London, which is a city walk. And I created it as a virtual version. And it was very successful, did really well, all of that sort of stuff. But as time has gone on, I've realized that another thing that the virtual tours lend themselves to is these thematic ones. And I've done Sick London, which is a story of medicine, and I've done a Jewish London one. I've done a Lost London one, which looks at places that don't exist anymore, or places that were never built. Mm-hmm. And again, this entertaining London one, which I'm doing on Wednesday, which looks at this one topic across the city, across time. And you can really cover an awful lot of ground in just an hour, virtually. You simply couldn't do on the street.
Yeah, exactly. Well, was it last night, that virtual tour, the A to Z, that brought the five of you together for the grand finale? Somebody, was it you, Russell, did Wilton's Music Hall? Now,
I did.
Out on the street, shoe leather on pavement, three-dimensional London, you could take people there, but there would be no way you could get across to Twickenham
to do rugby. Absolutely.
It just wouldn't be possible. But you can do this. Yeah, go on.
The other thing is that, if you were doing a tour of Wapping, which you could easily do, you could stand outside Wilton's. But it's very unlikely that you'd be able to take people inside and show them inside and show them what it looked like when people are having a wedding there. And say, look, this is a theatre venue, but also what a great place for people to get married. And, you can show people photos on your iPad. I do it a bit when I'm guiding. But, we try and be a little bit sparing with that.
Sure.
Because... it is all, I'm a bit of a purist at heart when it comes to guiding. And I think, you shouldn't use too many visual aids. It should all be about the storytelling. That thing that you always say, David, it's all about the guiding. And in the end, if you spend half the time getting people to squint at a little iPad screen while you're on the street, it's kind of not the point. So last night I did Wilton's Music Hall, which actually features... in entertaining London. It's one of the great music halls of London. Music halls were one of the most popular entertainment from the sort of 1850s until the end of the First World War. I think in 1870 there were something like 350 music halls within London. Mm-hmm. And almost everybody went, from most social classes, went to these broad and exciting entertainments. Again, raucous people eating and drinking and singing along, very sort of, interactive, joiny-inny kind of entertainment that doesn't really exist anymore. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But I did Wilton's Music Hall because I was doing W. I did Wilton's Music Hall, and then I went to Walthamstow. Mm-hmm. And then I was in Barnes in southwest London for the Wetland Centre.
Yeah.
All in the space of 10, 15 minutes.
Yeah, amazing, amazing.
Yeah.
Now I have to ask you this, because this is personal for both of us, Russell.
Mm-hmm.
The entertainment dancing. I am married to a dancer.
Yes.
Fathered a dancer. He's a break dancer, but he's a dancer. I describe myself on the leaflet as a balterer. That is a very hundreds of years old word. No one uses anymore except me. To balter was to dance clumsily. So
now dancing clumsily is better than not dancing at all.
That's my side of this. And your wife are very good. Indeed, you're award-winning dancers. Is dancing going to come into this at all?
Not especially, actually. There is a section on the dance bands that played in places like the Café Anglais in Leicester Square and the Monseigneur on Piccadilly and the Mayfair Hotel and the Savoy in the 1920s, 1930s. People like Harry Roy and Bert Ambrose and names like that. The dance bands that played were a key part of the entertainment scene, and I do have a section on that because it's a topic that's quite close to my heart. You know, in the 1920s, yeah, in the 1920s and 1930s, going to the cinema was very, very popular, but going out and dancing to a band was one of the most popular forms of entertainment across the country. There was something like 20,000 bands playing. I mean, a lot of these were amateurs, you know, people playing in a room at the pub or in a village hall at the weekend, and yet they had other jobs. But there were tens of thousands of professional musicians playing music in Britain in the 1920s, 1930s. And that doesn't really go on anymore. So, yeah, I mean, we do lots of different sorts of dancing. We do ballroom dancing, which we absolutely love. And we do a bit of competitive dancing as well. Although we don't compete with each other, we have separate partners from competitive dance. I think it's a better idea not to dance with your spouse. as Sarah once said to a friend of ours, there are enough causes of tension within a marriage without deliberately adding more to it. when you're dancing with somebody as a competitive team, you have to be very honest with each other. You make mistakes. You have to correct each other. And so actually, she dances with another woman, and I actually dance with another guy. We dance in the same sex competitive scene, which is quite a thriving one. And then we do that. That's quite serious. We work quite hard at it. You train. You have a coach. You put a bit of time and effort into it, but we do it socially as well. But we also do what's called swing dancing, things like Lindy Hop and Balboa, to kind of more jivey swing music. Lots of American dance band, dance music from the 50s, 60s, that sort of period. So it's quite a big scene of that in London, Lindy and swing dance. A bit younger, a bit more relaxed. You can have a drink with it. And there's actually quite a lot of bands play that sort of music in London. So, you can find at least once or twice a week in London in normal times. And I think it will come back, a band playing, just a three-piece or a four-piece playing, maybe gypsy jazz or something like that people can have a little dance to. It will come back. It will come back. We're not absolutely sure what the regulations are going to be for partner dancing. You can, of course, dance with somebody that you are in a household with or in a bubble with. But social dancing is about being social. It's about dancing with other people. And it looks like it will be allowed from the 21st of June. But how many people are going to feel ready to dance with multiple other people at that point, unmasked? We don't know. It might be, maybe by the autumn it will be back. I certainly hope so.
Go ahead.
No, carry on.
I'm telling you now. I'm making a public announcement here. I'm looking forward to the day, Russell, that I see you and Mary on the dance floor together dancing. I fell in love with her, watching her dance on stage in Derby, and you're a damn good dancer. And she still can't quite believe it, 40 years later, that she's married to a Balter. I've got that to look forward to. Anyway,
you say I'm a very good dancer. When you do the competitive stuff,
you
are left in no under no illusions of just how good or not good you actually are, because you are literally being judged. And you are always compared, and you always compare yourself to people who are better than you. I'm an okay dancer. I'm a very good dancer compared to people who can't dance, but compared to people that can dance, I'm okay.
What's that? We've got so off the subject, and we'll get back to it to close
fine.
It out. But
what's
that famous form of Spanish dancing? It got started in the south of Spain.
tango or flamenco.
Yeah. Well, Mary did a tango class there.
Yeah.
I think we were in Sevilla, someplace like that. And
You
know, she's a professional. She can just pick things up so quickly. And the instructors just, you know, saw her imitate the move, and she just turned to her and said, "You've done this before." I think that's the difference, isn't it, between an amateur and a pro.
But if you understand the language of dance, you understand your body as well. If you understand how to move, if you understand how to lead, how to follow, then you can pick up other forms of dancing that you haven't done before. Because, you know, the body works in the same way, that the technique might be slightly different, the moves might be slightly different, but, you know, it's dark, you know, it's in the end, it's just the music and generally two people interpreting that music.
Yeah.
That's all there is to it.
Well,
and if you've got that, then you can do anything.
We've got very agreeably sidetracked here.
That
last point about dancing. Will it be all right if I use that wonderful photograph, that black and white photograph of you dancing on the dance floor? Can I push that out on our social media?
Yeah, sure.
To trail this little podcast. Will that be all right?
Yeah, that'll be absolutely fine. Yes, that'd be great.
All right, last question then.
Yes.
Let's get it back to the entertainment virtual tour. What about organized sport then? Are you going to do that? And can you just tell me a little bit about the history of organized sport here now?
Well, you know, London is the home of, the rules of football were codified here in London. The rules of rugby were codified here in London. London is one of the great sporting cities of the world. Mm-hmm. We've got the Wimbledon Tennis Championships, of course. There's the Oval and Lords for cricket. There's Twickenham
three Olympics, is that right? Three Olympics.
Yeah, the only city or the first city in the world to have the Olympic Games three times. Because, of course, Paris in 2024 will have it for the third time, and LA in 2028 will have it for the third time. So, our crown of being the only will be gone by the end of this decade, but we're still the first, and they can never take that away. Uh-huh. From us. And, you know, football, soccer, you know, six of the 20 Premier League football teams are based here in London. There's another six football teams in the lower leagues here in London.
Uh-huh.
So I think, I think sport often gets a little bit overlooked in terms of, we don't do very much about it on tours. You know, people tend to be interested in more the arts and culture, which I'm very interested in. But I love my football. I love my sport. And so I'm always pushing to add a little bit of that into the mix as well, because it is, you know, one of the most enjoyed entertainments in London.
Is this a dangerous question to ask? I mean, my son supports Spurs.
Good for him.
Oh God!
Yeah. No, I'm a Tottenham fan. As is Adam, of course. Adam, one of the great London Walks guys. He's a Spurs fan.
Yeah, excellent. Well, a final...
as I said, although if you could call what Spurs do at the moment playing football, then I'm a football fan.
Yeah. Okay. Well, something that's just come to me listening to you and thinking a little bit about this. This is so much needed now. I think you've really hit a sweet spot with this subject, and by that I mean entertainment. It's really, unless you're playing chess by yourself, it's social, isn't it? It's people going out and doing things, either as spectators or participants. And there's been this drought of that for 15 months now. So
absolutely. I think people are desperate to be sociable again. Mm-hmm. And to experience live entertainment. You know, it's all very well, you know, watching all this stuff on the TV that we've had and doing this virtual tours, which are great, but there's something about a shared experience in a room, in a venue, in a place with other people, all of you feeling
cinema?
The same emotion.
Yeah, a theater, cinema. Yeah, absolutely.
Shared experiences is very important.
Okay. Yeah. Just great. Okay. Looking forward to it. Have you scheduled another one beyond this next one?
That's it. I did it last week, and I'm doing it again on Wednesday, the 5th of May at 7 p.m. London time. But that's it for now. And it may come back. I may do it again in the at the end of the summer.
Very good. Okay, Russell. Thanks a ton.
My absolute pleasure, David. Absolute
thanks,
pleasure.
Thanks a lot. Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
See you then. Yeah.
Bye-bye.
All best. Yeah, ciao.